We are in verse 1, Mark 15, verse 1. So just to recap, kids, you remember what happened last week? Jesus was arrested in the garden. Do you remember that? And who ran away? Speak up. The disciples all ran away, right? Jesus is feeling very alone. He went on trial. He was all alone there. He was beaten. And remember, Peter denied knowing Jesus. And that's kind of where we left off last week. And we're starting to lose a little hope. What's going on here? Jesus was such a good man. He says he's the Son of God. He's doing all these miraculous things. He's never done anything wrong. But yet now we find him on trial. And it looks like he might even be facing death. What's going on? What's going to happen? So, oh, this picture is really hard to see. It was a dark picture because this is kind of a dark sermon. If you look really closely, maybe angle down a little bit, you can see three crosses there. And I titled this one, Has Death Triumphed? Because what we're reading today, we really find ourselves losing hope. What is going on here? This is an innocent man killed. And we will find out what happens. So, next slide, Mark 15. And we're going to be reading verses 1 through 15 here first. And as soon as it was morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council. And they bound Jesus and led him away and delivered him over to Pilate. And Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered him, "You have said so." And the chief priests accused him of many things. And Pilate again asked him, "Have you no answer to make? See how many charges they bring against you." But Jesus made no further answer, so that Pilate was amazed. Now at the feast, he used to release for them one prisoner for whom they asked. And among the rebels in prison who had committed murder in the insurrection, there was a man called Barabbas. And the crowd came up and began to ask Pilate to do as he usually did for them. And he answered them, saying, "Do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?" For he perceived that it was out of envy that the chief priests had delivered him up. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have him release for them Barabbas instead. And Pilate again said to them, "Then what shall I do with the man you call king of the Jews?" And they cried out again, "Crucify him." And Pilate said to them, "Why? What evil has he done?" But they shouted all the more, "Crucify him." So Pilate, wishing to satisfy the crowd, released for them Barabbas. And having scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. Okay, so next slide. Jesus is delivered to Pilate. That is Pilate, not Pilate, if any of you are into exercise. So Jesus is delivered to Pilate. So kids, your first question, the Jewish council bound Jesus and led him away and delivered him over to Pilate. Good. Okay, so who is Pontius Pilate? He is the governor of Judea. So remember, Israel is under Roman rule right now. So Caesar is the king, right? And he can't be looking over every little thing, so he puts other people in charge of different regions. And Pilate is in charge of this region. And the Jews really didn't like Pilate. He was very harsh. He did not like Jewish people or their ways or anything like that. He brought in images of Tiberius Caesar and put them up. So they really didn't like him. He's putting up graven images. They put Caesar on the coins and everything. Pilate is fully Roman, okay? But he wants to look good to Caesar, his boss, and he also wants to keep peace, because if there's uprising and they have to use force, it's not going to look good. So Pilate is, he's doing his job, right? And the chief priests bring Jesus to Pilate. Why would they do that? What do you think? You guys are really quiet today. Yep.
They wanted him to die, so that's why they thought, as an authority figure that Pilate was,
yep,
that he could execute that punishment.
Yep. So That's really good. They wanted to kill Jesus themselves, but Rome would not allow the Jews to do that. Rome is saying, no, we're in charge here. You're under our laws. You need to follow our ways. So the chief priests are realizing, well, we want this man killed, but the only way to do that is to go to the guy in charge, and that would be Pilate here. Okay? So Rome did not allow the Jews to execute their criminals. They had to go through their system. And Pilate is looking at this whole case, and he's saying, this is really odd, right? Normally, you'd think the Jews would try to keep their people away from getting thrown in prison or killed or anything like that. This is strange. So he's a little skeptical, and the chief priests are telling him, well, this he claims to be king of the Jews, and they're doing this because they know Caesar is supposed to be the only king, right? So if they tell Pilate, this man is saying he's the king of us instead of Caesar, it's going to get Pilate on their side, and he's going to say, okay, yeah, you're right, I'm going to kill him. But Pilate's asking him questions. The chief priests are accusing him of many things, but Jesus remains silent. And Pilate asks him these things, and Jesus remains silent. And in Isaiah 53, we read this last week, we'll read it again here. It says, he was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to slaughter, and like a sheep that is before its shearers is silent, so he opened not his mouth. He knew that if he defended himself, he could get off, right? But he also knew, no, this is the will of my Father, that I die for my people. I need to remain silent. Well, what criminal ever remains silent, right? They're going to defend themselves. And Pilate is just perplexed. Why would you remain silent if you're innocent and they're accusing you of all these things? Why won't you speak up and defend yourself? We could get you off. But he did not do that. And it says in verse 10, so Pilate knew that the Sanhedrin was setting Jesus up. It says in verse 10, for he perceived that it was out of envy that the chief priests had delivered him up. He didn't trust the chief priests. He knew what they were up to. But yet, he's got to watch his job, right? Because if the chief priests are getting the people on their side, there might be an uprising if Pilate doesn't go along with it. So, next slide. This is about Barabbas. Pilate's custom at feast time here, Passover time, was to release one prisoner to the Jews. Now, Pilate's looking at this whole case, and he's like, this is crazy, but we have a chance to release him. So even if he's not going to defend himself, this is our custom, and we have a chance to let an innocent man go free. So, kids, Pilate was willing to let a prisoner go free. He offered to let Jesus go, but the people wanted him to release a murderer named Barabbas. You can be a little bit louder when I ask you a question. I want to make sure you guys are following along, okay? So, Barabbas murdered someone. That's why he's in jail. Could you imagine being outside and they're saying, we're going to release one person from prison? Well, here, how about this guy? He's innocent. And we're all shouting, no, release the murderer. Isn't that weird? That's weird, isn't it? But that's what's happening here. And Pilate is like, well, then what do you want me to do with this innocent man, this king of the Jews? And they're crying, crucify him. Right? Verse 14 says, Pilate said to them, why? What evil has he done? So, yeah. I think probably any law, Roman or Jewish. Like Jesus is not showing any sign of aggression or defense or anything. And in some of the other Gospels, it gives you more details as to what's going on. Even his wife had a dream that this man is innocent, and she was bothered by it. She couldn't sleep. And she goes to Pilate and says, you got to let this guy go. This is a big deal. So Pilate's doing everything in his power to convince people, let Jesus go. He's innocent. Okay? So just imagine, again, he's giving them the opportunity. They're saying, no, we want him punished. We want him killed. And he's saying, well, who should I release them? Look at all these guys. They're murderers. They've done all sorts of bad things. And they're saying, release the murderer. We want him killed. The chief priests are really stirring them up to kill Jesus. Okay, so, and Pilate, again, like I think it was three times here, he's saying, why, what, he's innocent. Why, what has he done? And they keep saying, crucify him. So, and then it says in verse 15, so Pilate, wishing to satisfy the crowd, again, he's trying to cover his job, right? He doesn't want an uprising. Released for them Barabbas, and having scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. So next slide. I didn't put any graphic pictures on here just because we have young children present. But if you guys have seen the Passion, have you seen the Passion? I think it's not completely theologically accurate, right? But I think Mel Gibson did a really good job of showing us what scourging would have been like in that time. And I, up until that time I saw that movie, I had no idea that it was that crazy, that violent. Okay, and he even said in an interview that it was probably more so, but they tamed it so it would stay an R-rated movie. So just imagine an innocent man now being put on trial and say, you're going to your death, but first we're going to scourge you. So whip you, beat you, things like that. What was the scourging like? First they would take rods, this is history, and they would whack him many, many times with rods, kind of tenderize the meat. And then they would take a whip, and the whip was made of 9 leather strands, and they had pieces of bone and metal tied into them. So already he's been beat with rods. The meat is very tender, the muscle. And then they would take a whip with these little things that would rip the skin off. Okay? Now, I know this is graphic, but this is what Jesus went through for us. Okay? So he's going through all this, and they would do 40 lashes. 40 lashes with 9 leather strands is 360 stripes across his chest and back and wherever. Okay? This is before the cross. Okay? So he's gone through so much. And next slide, we're going to read what happens next in verse 16. So Jesus has just been scourged, delivered to be crucified. Verse 16, and the soldiers led him away inside the palace, that is the governor's headquarters. And they called together the whole battalion, and they clothed him in a purple cloak, and twisting together a crown of thorns, they put it on him, and they began to salute him. Hail, King of the Jews! And they were striking his head with a reed, and spitting on him, and kneeling down in homage to him. And when they had mocked him, they stripped him of the purple cloak and put his own clothes on him and led him out to crucify him. So it says here a whole battalion got together. Any guesses as to how many men are in a battalion?
300.
600. Okay. So imagine Jesus has just gone through this whole scourging, beating, whipping, and now they bring him out. And there's 600 men present, and they start mocking him. So next slide. There we go. Okay, so imagine 600 soldiers surrounding you. And I what I wanted to do is something different right now. Just imagine this from a Roman soldier's perspective, okay? You're used to dealing with the worst criminals, beating guilty men, okay? So you can understand why they're doing this. Okay? You can imagine, oh, this man says he's king of the Jews. Look at him. He's just rebel scum. He's a pathetic king, and we're going to make fun of him. And they put a purple robe on him, and they put a crown of thorns. So they imagine that. You guys ever walked in the woods, and you just felt one prick from a thorn? They twisted them together and made a pretend crown for him, and they pushed it in his head. And they started, it says they struck. They were striking his head. So with thorns in his brow, they were hitting him on the head with another stick, and they were kneeling down and spitting on him and making fun of him. Oh, you're a king. Look at you. Can you imagine it from their perspective? To them, he was just another criminal. But yet, they also were worshiping a false god, right? Caesar is our king. When in reality, they were doing the worst things to the real king. And they put his own clothes back on him And next slide, we read what happens next in verse 21. And they compelled a passerby, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to carry his cross. And they brought him to the place called Golgotha, which means place of a skull. And they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it. And they crucified him and divided his garments among them, casting lots for them to decide what each should take. And it was the third hour when they crucified him. And the inscription of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." And with him they crucified two robbers, one on his right and one on his left. And those who passed by derided him, wagging their heads and saying, "Aha, you who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself and come down from the cross." So also the chief priests with the scribes mocked him to one another, saying, "He saved others, he cannot save himself. Let the Christ, the King of Israel, come down now from the cross, that we may see and believe." Those who were crucified with him also reviled him. So you guys getting the picture of what's going on here? I don't know if you follow our Facebook page. I put a post on there yesterday about the cross. It's such a popular symbol. We see it on jewelry and clothing and on top of churches and stuff. But when we stop and realize what the cross was, it should be offensive, isn't it? Isn't it kind of uncomfortable reading through this stuff, what they did to Jesus? We're supposed to feel that. That's what it's supposed to do. So next slide. Jesus has been beat and whipped and mocked and shamed. And now they're making him carry his own crossbar up the hill to be crucified. And Jesus can't do it. Jesus, kids, was beaten so badly he couldn't carry his cross by himself. The Roman soldiers made a man named, what's that? Simon of Cyrene help Jesus, right? Cyrene is a city in what is modern-day Libya, northern Africa, okay? And it says he was a passerby. So he was coming in from the country. He was surely not wanting to be involved, right? So they're leading Jesus out of the city, and he's walking by, and they realize, oh, Jesus can't carry his cross. Let's get this guy. He's obviously from out of town. We don't care about him. Let's get him to help carry this criminal's cross. And I got thinking about Simon. It says he was the father of Alexander and Rufus. So I'm thinking when Mark wrote this, his first listeners would have known, well, these guys. And I think Rufus is even mentioned in the end of Romans. So they're saying this happened to their dad when they were little boys. And they're probably walking with their father. They're watching this whole thing. If my kids saw a bloody, beaten man walking down the road, I would probably try to turn their heads, right? You don't need to see this. And here, Simon's just coming in from the country, wanting to probably worship at the temple with his young boys, and now he's forced by Roman soldiers to carry the cross of a criminal. And he has to carry this crossbar. It's heavy. He's getting sweaty and dirty with Jesus. Jesus' blood is probably dripping on him. I mean, imagine you want to walk into church and worship at the temple. Maybe you have nice clothes or whatever, and all of a sudden you're getting blood and dirt and sweat all over you. Why am I having to do this? And the crossbar would usually be around 100 pounds. And the post was permanently outside the city, and we got to carry this 100-pound cross a long way. Next slide. Oh, we missed one. It's not working, huh? This is the crucifixion. So kids, circle the things as we go through them here. What happened when Jesus was hung on the cross? So it says, the third hour. This is about 9 a.m. Okay? All this stuff has happened. Jesus didn't get any sleep last night. He's been on trial. He's been beat. Can you imagine just the exhaustion that he's already been through, the beating? We're not even sure if someone could survive this whole beating. And now they nail him to the cross. And again, I think so often we see this symbol and we just like, oh, that's the Christian symbol. But if you imagine a criminal being nailed up onto the wall, I mean, that's what it was like, but this is out in public. This is for anyone to come and see and make fun of him. And they offered him wine mixed with myrrh. This would have been like a sedative kind of thing to kind of help ease the pain. And yet it says Jesus refused to take it. He could have had it easier, and he chose, no, I'm going to feel the full weight of what my Father wants me to do. I'm not going to take it. And it says they divided his garments. So Psalm 22:18 prophesies about this. They divided my garments among them, and they cast lots. So imagine you're in the hospital, and the doctors and nurses fill the room, and they start laughing at you. You're laying naked in bed, and they start poking fun of you. And the only thing that you have there with you at the hospital is your watch and your clothes. And they start playing a game to see who can get that. This is what it's like for Jesus. He's already been shamed and beaten, and he's hanging there. And now they start taking, the only thing he had left was his clothes, and they start playing games with him. And the inscription hung on the cross, again, is to mock him. This is the King of the Jews. Look, if you want to be king instead of Caesar, this is what will happen to you. This is how pathetic we will make you look. And he's hung between two robbers. So just anyone passing by would be like, oh, three criminals are getting killed today. People are mocking him. You talked about destroying the temple, yet you can't save yourself. And the chief priests and scribes are mocking him. And the criminals even next to him are mocking him. He is utterly alone. Next slide. And when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of the bystanders hearing it said, behold, he is calling Elijah. And someone ran and filled a sponge with sour wine, put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink, saying, wait, let us see whether Elijah will come and take him down. And Jesus uttered a loud cry and breathed his last. And the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And when the centurion who stood facing him saw that in this way he breathed his last and said, truly this man was the Son of God. There were also women looking on from a distance, among whom were Mary Magdalene, and Mary, the mother of James the younger, and of Joseph, and Salome. When he was in Galilee, they followed him and ministered to him, and there were also many other women who came up with them to Jerusalem. So here again, next slide, we have darkness for 3 hours as Jesus is hanging, nailed on the cross. There's darkness in the land. You guys, is it ever truly dark here from like noon to 3? It's the middle of the day, right? The sun is the highest. It should be the brightest. And here darkness is covering the whole land. And at the ninth hour, which is about 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Again, he's thinking of Psalm 22 as he's hanging on the cross. And I don't think he's just thinking of the one verse. He's thinking of the whole psalm. And we're not going to go through it this morning, but I would encourage you guys sometime today or this week, read through that psalm and see all the parallels of what's going on between the prophecy in that psalm and what's actually happening here in the Gospels. And it says, they gave him a sponge with sour wine. Now, some commentaries say, well, this type of thing was to help them stay alive longer. It would have given them a little hydration to keep them alive and suffer longer. And some commentaries say that the sponge that they used was the same sponge they would have used in the bathroom. They didn't have toilet paper back then. They would have used something else. And they would have used the wine vinegar to kill any bacteria and things like that. Either way, Jesus took this sponge. He didn't take the first one that would have eased his pain, but he took the second one. So whether it is just something disgusting put in his mouth or whether it's something to keep him alive to stay longer, he took it for us. Verse 37, and Jesus uttered a loud cry and breathed his last. Now, a commentary on John's account of this says that when he cried out with a loud voice, it is finished. It's one word in the ancient Greek language. This ancient word means paid in full. This is the cry of a winner. Cry of a winner, because Jesus paid in full the debt of the sin we owed and had finished the eternal purpose of the cross. Next slide. Jesus breathes his last. So all this suffering, and he cries out, and he breathed his last, and he dies. And the Roman centurion proclaims what? Truly this man was the Son of God. Think of who said that. A Roman soldier. This Roman centurion is the only one who proclaims Son of God to describe Jesus, except for Mark himself in Mark 1, verse 1. And this man is a Roman soldier, he's a Gentile, and he proclaims this in public. And there are women in the distance, but I just find it interesting, the first one to proclaim who Jesus was after he died was a Gentile Roman soldier. Next slide. Something also happened at the moment of Jesus' death. Verse 38 says, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. Now, someone who doesn't know the significance of this curtain might read this and be like, wow, that was weird, right? But there's actually huge significance to this. So, kids, your question, the moment Jesus died, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. Good. This was the curtain guarding the Holy of Holies. The Holy of Holies was the place where God physically dwelt with his people, the Israelites, in the tabernacle, in the temple, and there would be a curtain to separate from where the people could be from where God was. Okay? No one except the high priest once a year was allowed back there. And here, when Jesus died, this curtain was torn from top to bottom. Uh-oh, right? That shouldn't happen. This curtain, they estimate, was about 60 feet high and 4 inches thick. So I don't think something could just fall on it and it just rips, right? That's a really big, tough curtain. When Jesus died, it was torn from top to bottom. 60 feet, 4 inches thick. What's going on here? Well, just think, when Jesus died, it made a way for God to be with all of his people. This wasn't just something that happened in the temple by accident. This was God saying, it's done. His death was significant for all people. So at the moment that happened, a Roman soldier finally said, truly this man was the Son of God. He wasn't by the temple. He didn't know what happened. He was just watching the way Christ suffered. And all this was taking place at once. Next slide. Why was Jesus' death so significant? I've been bothered all week. What should I talk about here? We could read the whole New Testament here, couldn't we? But when we think of the whole story of the Bible, what happened in the garden when Adam and Eve sinned, they were cast out of God's presence, right? They couldn't be with him anymore. But God gave them hope and he promised, someday I'm going to send someone that's going to right the wrong that you did. He's going to crush the head of the serpent. And people are waiting all throughout the Old Testament. Is it this one? No, he sins. Is it this one? No, he sins. Why did Jesus have to die? To be that promised one. He had to suffer and be crushed in order to crush death and sin forever. And all in the Old Testament, there's sacrifices being made, and it's all just little pictures of the sacrifice that would be made with Jesus on the cross. They had to find a perfect lamb to symbolize this is the perfect one dying, the one that does not deserve to die. And it would atone their sins, but yet the real atonement for their sins just happened when Christ died on the cross. 1 Peter 2:24 says, "He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed." And I found something else in a book I've been reading that I wanted to share. And it's funny, I forgot the book to bring this morning and share with you guys. But I had something else on my heart this morning when I woke up. And I was debating, should I share out of the book or should I share what the Lord kind of placed in my heart this morning? And I honestly just forgot the book. So this is what he shared with me this morning. "I'm the crowd. Before I knew who Jesus was, I was the one in my words and thoughts and actions shouting, 'Crucify him.' I'm Barabbas. I have done things that I deserve to be in prison and put to death. And yet someone took my place to die for me so I could go free. When I meet Jesus, I'm Simon. I'm following him in his footsteps. I'm bearing my own cross with him as I follow him. And I'm now also the Roman centurion who can proclaim, 'This is the Son of God.'" Does that make sense? Why did Jesus have to die? Why is his death so significant? It saved me from death and hell. It gives me purpose to be more human, to be more the way God intended me to be, to live and worship him, to spread his image over the earth, not only by making children, but by making disciples of all nations. We have that purpose again. And that's good news, isn't it? So my last slide, will you believe? I'd like to think everyone sitting here has put their trust in Jesus. I don't know. I'm not the judge. But we have the opportunity now to repent and believe and walk out of here following him and proclaiming him to the world. And I just want you guys to think, I know it was kind of graphic today, but that's good. It should bother us. He took on that suffering for us and saved us and gave us purpose. This isn't just a necklace we wear. It's not a tattoo we have. It's not on a t-shirt. It means something. It gives me life, gives me purpose, gives me eternity. And that's good news.